to 33, activities of Kapila, text 35, Seyogam Samasaya, Sankhyachaya, Abhishtuta, Shriyanam Apilokanam, Upasantyai Samahita. Translation. Even now, Kapila Muni is staying there in trance for the deliverance of the conditioned souls in the three worlds. And all the Acharyas, or great teachers, of the system of Sankhya philosophy are worshipping him. Next text. My dear son, since you have inquired for me, I have answered. O sinless one, the descriptions of Kapila Dev and his mother and their activities are the purest of all pure discourses. Next text. The description of the dealings of Kapila Dev and his mother, is very confidential, and anyone who hears or reads this narration becomes a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is carried by Garuda, and he thereafter enters into the abode of the Supreme Lord in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Report. The narration of Kapila Dev and his mother, Devahuti, is so perfect and transcendental that even if one only hears or reads this description, he achieves the highest professional goal of life, for he engages in the loving service of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no doubt that Devahuti, who had the Supreme Lord as her son, and who followed the instructions of Kapila Dev so nicely, attained the highest perfection of human life. Thus ends the book given down to purports of the third canto, 33rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Activities of Kapila, and that is the end of the third canto completely. Of Lord Kapila Dev enlightening Devahuti, is full of responsibility, affection, and knowledge. The Leela began with Kardama Muni marrying Devahuti, and then the Lord took birth as their son. This Leela is very attractive because it contains very prominently elements of bhakti that we should consider very seriously. And you see these elements of bhakti interacting with such wondrous delight and precision. Krishna consciousness is indeed scientific, but the precision of Krishna consciousness doesn't simply refer to quantitative precision. That is the bias put into the intelligence by materialistic society. Precision is only a quantitative factor, measurement of matter. But when you read Lord Kapila Dev's interaction with Devahuti, you find qualitative precision. It's a very important point. We are not simply matter, we are spirit soul. Therefore, besides measuring the material energy and how precisely it interacts, we need some standard for measuring the qualitative interaction. And that measuring stick you'll get from this Leela of Lord Kapila Dev and Devahuti. You'll find the elements of responsibility, affection, detachment, and knowledge, all perfectly balanced. First of all, what can we focus upon? Detachment. You cannot deny that there is no detachment. You cannot say that there is no detachment in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it involves a husband, a wife, and a son. There's a deep bond of affection, but there is precise detachment. Everything is happening at the right time, in the right way, for maximum progress back to Godhead. At the right time, Kardama Muni started his family, although he was such an austere yogi. At the right time, he left home. He left Devahuti under the care of the son, Kapiladeva. At the right time, Kapiladeva left home. There was such an intense bond of affection. You feel that affection as you read through the third canto about Kardama Muni, Devahuti, and Kapiladeva. Yet there is precise leaving of attachment. These were such high caliber personalities, what to speak of the supreme personality of Godhead. Yet they're showing, even when things are completely spiritual, still there's a time to demonstrate detachment. You'll find this in Chaitanya Lila also. The Lord one day announced to the devotees at Jagannath Puri that he wants to go on tour of South India. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately reacted, "How can you, who I've attained after many births, now want to leave me? I've achieved your lotus feet with such difficulty." In other words, I was such a dry Mayavadi philosopher. You've given me the taste of bhakti rasa. In other words, I'm experiencing the perfection of life, spiritual variegatedness, with you here in Jagannath Puri, and now you want to go. Nevertheless, I understand you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are independent, so I know you'll go. Therefore, I have one request. Actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had two requests, but the first one was, please stay for a few more days. This is a powerful indicator of bhakti, how the devotee can tell the supreme cause of all causes, please stay, don't go. Yudhisthira did this when the Lord was seeking to depart from Hastinapura to go back to Dwarka. My dear Lord Krishna, can you please stay a few days longer? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he asked the same thing, and the Lord agreed. Then it became time for the Lord to go. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made another request. Please, there is one person in South India who you should make sure you talk to. I'm requesting you, please do that. His name is Brahmananda Roy. He is the most expert knower of Rasa Tattva, the science of spiritual behavior in relationship with Krishna. Before I met you, Mahaprabhu, I thought that this Ramananda Roy was just a worldly man, in other words, a sentimentalist. How could Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understand bhakti? He was a dry impersonalist, Mayavadi. But, in association with Jayati Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya began to look back, and he could understand this Ramananda Roy was actually the highest devotee. But I couldn't understand that. How could a dry Gani absorbed in neti-neti understand rasa? So he thought, this Ramananda Roy, first of all, he's a worldly man, he works for the government, he's a family man. Obviously, he could have been of no transcendental value to me. But now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understands. And he begged the Lord, you please talk to him when you go to South India. So, the Lord prepared for his departure. Very affectionate, but a precise departure in terms of detachment. The Lord and his associates went to the Jagannath temple, and the Lord wanted to ask permission of the Jagannath deity, may I go on tour? So here you have the Supreme Lord asking permission of the Supreme Lord. Sometimes you may wonder why mundane professors can't understand Bhakti Yoga. Here you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahaprabhu. He's gone to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to get permission to go on tour. And Jagannath gave the Lord permission to go. That was demonstrated by the Pujari immediately bringing Mahaprabhu a garland. That's the permission of Lord Jagannath. So the Lord and his associates circumambulated the Jagannath deity three times, and then the Lord left. Immediately, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya collapses on the ground. Thanks. But Lord Caitanya does not hesitate. He keeps going. Try to visualize the power of this scene. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the most brilliant person whose philosophical and knowledge and intelligence has now been totally possessed by Lord Caitanya for bhakti. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is so attached to Lord Caitanya. But the Lord leaves without hesitating one step, even though Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya collapses on the ground due to realizing the separation. Nityananda Prabhu and some other devotees, they help Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya up. They pick him up because he's fainted on the ground. Mahaprabhu, however, has kept going. This scene shows the bonds of transcendental affection, at the same time the precise detachment. Now Lord Kapiladev, he's left. He's given his mother everything she needs to know to go back to Godhead. He did not hesitate to go. And she immediately began to practice what her son had taught her. And in this way, she achieved the highest goal of life. Prabhupada writes in the purport that certainly she achieved liberation. As you heard earlier, she went to Vaikuntha, to a special planet where Lord Kapiladeva resides eternally. Not only do you have this element of precise detachment, but you also have the element of affection. Kardama Muni's affection for his wife, Lord Kapiladeva's affection for his mother, her affection for him. This is undeniably there. You see, sometimes there's this misunderstanding of Bhakti Yoga that it is just some kind of mechanical philosophy. No! How could anyone think like that? Because Bhakti involves the spirit soul, it must involve an infinite world of flavors in personal dealings. That you'll find in this Leela of Kapiladeva and Devahuti while the Lord is expounding Sankhya knowledge. Try to think about this. You would think that Sankhya means studying the material world, what is matter, what is spirit, getting to the root of the material world. It sounds, according to our contaminated understanding, a bit like a spiritual version of material science. You're constantly analyzing, you're constantly discriminating, devoid of any personal content, just the facts, just the facts. Nothing personal, just the facts about material nature. But you cannot understand material nature without understanding personal. We'll be speaking more about this tonight at our program. We will explain to the future scientists and future devotees and present devotees there, that their so-called science has depersonalized existence because all they understand is the so-called objective world. They do not understand subjectivity, meaning they don't understand the person. But they have pride. We understand matter. Ask them what is consciousness. Ask them what is the person. That they don't know. but it is the person, it is the consciousness that perceives the objective world. So if you don't understand subjectivity, in other words, you don't understand consciousness, how can you say you understand the physical world that is perceived by a conscious person? Sankhya Yoga involves basically two things. Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti is material nature. And Purusha refers, as you all know, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or a living entity who's trying to imitate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Through Sankhya Yoga, you can understand your struggles in this material world. Manasya Sthani Vyani, Prakriti Sthani Karshati. Our situation is Prakriti Sthani. We're stuck in material nature. And we're struggling. Manasya Sthani Vyani. Prabhupada describes it to be like a fly that lands in the honey. Attracted by the honey, the fly goes to it. And then the fly gets stuck. The fly tries to free itself, shaking its wings, shaking its legs. But the more the fly struggles, the more the fly is caught. That is Prakriti Sthani Karshati, the hard struggle for existence. But if during this struggle you get the so-called honey-like taste of sense gratification, then you're willing to concede. I don't mind suffering. As long as I get a little bit of this artificial honey, then I'll put up with so much. Kum sastriya mitri bhavanetam. Gorbachev says, this relishing of the artificial honey between the male and female, that is the basis of material existence. To taste that artificial honey, you'll put up with so much struggle. In fact, you won't even call it a struggle. You'll say, I'm very proud to have the honor of taking on so many false burdens. Prahlad Maharaj says, Maya Sakaya Puram, Udvahato Vimudhan. Those who are especially foolish. Fool means mudha, but then we have the super fool category, Vimudha. The empowered fool. What is the symptom of the empowered fool? Maya Sakaya Puram. The empowered fool doesn't simply carry a real burden. The super fool carries an imaginary burden and struggles under it. This is the gift of Maya, the benediction of Maya. You will kindly take an imaginary burden and struggle under it. And if someone tries to point out, you actually have no burden, all this is unnecessary, you become very angry. Who are you to tell me this? Get a job. Do something practical. Why are you trying to point out that I am struggling under an imaginary burden? You should do something practical. I'm a practical man of this world. I'm paying mortgage. I'm paying for my car. I'm sending my children to the university. These are events of profound significance. These events will influence the course of humanity for generations to come. And what are you doing? You are simply pointing out to me I'm struggling under an imaginary burden. Look, I don't even have time to worry whether the burden's imaginary or not. That is not the point of life. The point of life is that I feel like I'm doing something. Never mind what it is. That I feel like I'm doing something. And I'm very busy also. This is the goal of Western so-called civilization. And is being spread around the world. Just become busy in economic development. Don't worry about the point of it. Don't worry about the goal. Don't even worry about the effect. Simply be busy in economic development. With faith. And everything will come from that. This foolish attitude, Maya Sukaya, brings about severe reactions from material nature. For example, when you misuse the time that's given to you as a human being, material nature strikes back at you because it is a violation of the universal law. Time in the human life is given to you as a chance to achieve perfection. But when you misuse that time simply for activities of economic development, then you get a reaction from material nature for misuse. Just like if you disturb the environment, you abuse the environment, you get a reaction. You get bad air to breathe, bad water to drink, polluted food, which gives you no nourishment. Those are all reactions for misusing your environment. Similarly, you also get a reaction for misusing time. Human life is full of responsibility. For misusing time, you get the reaction of anxiety. You're struggling, prakatisthani karshati, and amidst your struggles, you're filled with anxiety. But you think, if I struggle more, I'll stop the anxiety. You don't know that just by struggling, you're bringing anxiety, and the more you struggle, the more anxiety comes. You can't see that. Sadasamadvidyadvyamasagrahat. Prahlad Maharaj explained to his father, Hiranyakashipu. Because you've accepted the body as yourself and material existence as your very life and soul, you must be filled with anxiety. But because you're a super fool, you think, I'll struggle harder, then the anxiety will go. And you resist effort to hear the science of disentanglement from Maya and engagement at the Lord's lotus feet. Pride develops in you based on your struggles in material life. Just see what I've done. Just see what I can accomplish. But actually, you are simply bringing anxiety upon yourself and passing that anxiety to others. That is what happens in material life. Pride in carrying a false burden. So you have prakriti, you have purusha, you have material nature, and you have the living entities trying to imitate the Supreme Lord. What is the relationship between the two, material nature and the living entities? That relationship is called samsara, repeated birth and death. This is what Sankhya Yoga is bringing you to understand. There's matter. There is the living entity. They have a relationship. What is that relationship? Bliss? Eternity? Full understanding? No, the relationship is samsara, repeated birth and death. So if you want to cut that relationship, then you must chop down the tree of material attachment. So Krishna consciousness is the precise science, how to chop that tree down. Ashvatthamenam subhirudha mulam. Krishna exhorts you in the Gita, 15th chapter. Cut down that tree with determination. Devahuti, she approached her son with complete honesty and purity in inquiry. The Shastra notes that Devahuti's questioning was indeed such a high standard of purity. She said to Kapilade, I'm sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. That attitude is a necessity to begin spiritual progress. There has to be dissatisfaction with engagement in the material world. So she expressed that attitude, I'm sick of this. I want something more. Then she said, you, she seized upon her son, you are my transcendental I, which I have attained after so many mishaps in material life. Now I've got you, my eye, I can see. She's letting you know the job of the guru. The guru is the eye, and the disciple uses the guru to see the way back to Godhead. Bhakti is such an intricate and profound activity that guidance is required every step of the way. Those devotees who are eager for guidance, they make spiritual progress relatively easily. And those devotees who don't understand that bhakti is personal and therefore requires some personal guidance at every step, they run into so many difficulties. Why did this happen? Why did that happen? this shouldn't have happened to me. Who did this? Why did you treat me like that? These are all symptoms of a devotee who doesn't have personal guidance. Through the transcendental eye, you can see Krishna's arrangement. Sometimes devotees, they say very mechanically, that's a nice sentiment, of course, and they are saying Krishna. But whatever happens, they say, oh, Krishna's arrangement. But how to actually see the Lord's divine will? That requires a transcendental eye. It is nice to say, oh, Krishna's arrangement. But it is much better to get the help to see the actual workings of the Lord. Devahuti, she's saying like that, I've got you now, you're my transcendental eye. I can see, even though I'm in the darkness of ignorance. She's so humble, although the Supreme Personality of God is her son. And then she says, with your help, I will cut down the tree of material existence. Then what happens? Lord Kapila Dev, he smiled within himself, pleased by his mother's pure inquiry. Inquiry is a prime necessity in spiritual advancement. A disciple who is making advancement has questions. Not questions based on idle curiosity, but questions based on the obvious reality that I'm spirit soul trapped in the material atmosphere. I'm trying to serve Krishna in the material atmosphere. How can I most effectively do that? It is the responsibility of the disciple to ask such questions. And of course, the spiritual master must have the qualifications to give the guidance. How to solve this problem of spirit soul within the material world, trying to become free. When you ask questions, it shows you're thinking about things. It shows you're trying to enter into the subject matter and apply it. Lord Kapila Dev, he was pleased by these very heartfelt, practical, down-to-earth, and eloquent questions by his mother, and he began to teach her. In this way, we can see the elements of affection and knowledge together. You cannot deny the affection that's there. At the same time, you cannot deny the powerful knowledge of Sankhya that's being given. Fundamental principles of material nature, understanding material nature, these are all subjects that Lord Kapila Dev explained. And of course, we already discussed the element of detachment that's there. Then, there's also the element of responsibility. Nothing happens in this description of the family. Nothing happens whimsically. Kardama Muni does everything at the right time with the proper motive for serving the Supreme Lord through his family and then leading his family. Very responsible. He gave his wife a son who could instruct her, and then he left. The son instructed the mother. When he felt the job was done sufficiently, he left. Everything is there with maximum responsibility. So sometimes we have difficulty how all these elements fit together in life. How can there be affection, detachment, responsibility, and knowledge going on all at once? To demonstrate that powerful combination, we have to see living examples, and we need living guidance. Now, we are finishing this third canto. We are being given the benediction that just by hearing about this, we will also attain perfection. By hearing of the Lord's dealings with his devotees, we attain the nature of the Lord and his pure devotees. This is a scientific principle that cannot be understood through material analysis. How by hearing of the Lord, you revive the qualities, your divine qualities. The Lord is the Supreme Person. By hearing of the Lord, your perfect personhood develops. You can go to school and study the interactions of matter, but where can you study the interactions between the Supreme Spirit and the individual spirit? Those interactions also have results. You can study for so many years the reactions of chemicals, the reactions of metals, the reactions of the solar system. Even that no one understands, although it's matter, they cannot understand it. Honest astronomers will tell you that at least 90% of the universe is composed of a substance that no one knows. They call it dark matter. At least 90% of the universe is composed of this stuff. No one knows what it is. They can't describe it. But still, we shall pass as great knowledgeable scientists. Then what about the living entity itself? What is the cause of consciousness? How does consciousness arise? No scientist can explain that point. We will discuss tonight how there is not one tiny shred of scientific evidence that you have consciousness. Not one shred of what you call scientific evidence. You cannot give me one bit of scientific evidence, empirical scientific evidence that you have consciousness. No one can. What is the only thing you can say? I have a first-hand experience that I think I'm conscious. That's all anybody can do. So the most important thing about living entity, there is not one drop of scientific evidence about. There is no scientific instrument that can detect the presence of consciousness. It's not simply a question of technology. There's not even a proper theoretical framework for understanding what is consciousness. When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you are dealing with the Supreme Consciousness and the individual consciousness and what happens when they are together and separated. But you also get the techniques that allow you to come to the level of the great souls described in Srimad Bhagavatam. You will be transformed, but it's a different kind of science. It has to be different because it acknowledges spirit as superior and matter as inferior. Matter is known as dvitiya, the second, or the shadow. Chayeva yasya bhuvanani bhavati durga, Lord Brahma says, it is the shadow energy. What is the use if you have all your knowledge about the shadow, but you know nothing of the real thing? Why is this knowledge called confidential? The description of the dealings of Kapiladeva and his mother is very confidential. It is confidential because unless you adopt the procedure Krishna gives you, you cannot understand it. That means you have to have some personal affinity for Krishna. Otherwise, the knowledge will seem completely inaccessible to you. You can't measure your way into it with some instrument. You can't use some scientific devices to extract this knowledge. The knowledge is only revealed through loving devotional service. Therefore, the simple revolutionary fact is there, and we cannot deny it, that even a person who just mops the floor of the temple will become more brilliant than the greatest material scientist. I was speaking once in Tokyo, and there was one congregational member who was attending Tokyo University, Todai. And to go to the University of Tokyo, you must begin preparing when you are 3 years old. Here in Bombay, I have heard Radhanath Swami told me tonight we'll be doing a program at the pinnacle of achievement. What is this like? IAD. Yes, the supreme destination. Japan, they have their supreme destination. It's called the Todai in Japanese. And you begin when you're 3 years old to prepare. Otherwise, you have no chance of attaining the highest goal. From 3 years old, your head is crammed with material knowledge. And you go to school during the day. You go to school during the night until you are 18. And then if you're fortunate, you are chosen as one of the very select few who can enter into Tokyo University. From that point on, most of the students, they don't study. They have already attained Brahma Loka. Their future is guaranteed when they leave the university. The employers will come and worship them. Oh, please give us the honor of you working for our firm. You are from the Todai, Tokyo University. So I said to this congregational member, don't allow me to startle you, but did you know that this new devotee, who was from a very ordinary family, his parents were like maintenance workers who kept the train station clean. The devotee was very simple. He didn't know much. He had newly come to the temple. And he was exhausted from material life. He was very eagerly doing all services they gave him, and at that stage of his career in Krishna consciousness, all he could do really was clean and mop and wash pots. So I said to the congregational member from Tokyo University, did you know, I don't want to startle you, but did you know this devotee, he will become more brilliant than the greatest professors at your university? His mouth has dropped. That is true. That is the power of bhakti yoga. This new devotee, although coming from a low family and doing simple chores in the temple, he has the chance now to understand the most confidential knowledge discussed between Kapila Dev and his mother, Devahuti. He can solve the riddle of material existence, the relationship between Prakriti and Purusha. He can solve that. He can stop the cycle of samsara. These are the kinds of extraordinarily profound and mysterious concepts and realities that we deal with every day in Krishna consciousness. Now we've gotten the benedictions from Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone who hears or reads this narration becomes a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is carried by Garuda, and he thereafter enters into the abode of the Supreme Lord to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. From this point, we'll enter the fourth canto. Are there any questions? Yes.
From last about 5 to 6 years in India, a huge way in Indian economic development is going on. And they go for a liberalization process in a very, very huge way. Everything is getting liberalized. Banking, insurance, all sorts of things are getting liberalized. And due to this reason, specifically in a city like Bombay, a devotee is finding it extremely difficult to go with that pace itself. Because everybody in Bombay, they are working approximately 11 to 12 hours a day just to maintain their standard of living. In that situation, it becomes extremely difficult to maintain a proper consciousness, because all those people with whom you are working, they have only one aim and one goal, how to earn more and more money and how to enjoy self-gratification. And they are ready to do anything and everything for the sake of money. In that circumstances, how a devotee who has to follow all the four regulatory principles in a topmost level, at the same time maintain a proper consciousness, and that too also earn money in that atmosphere itself, just to maintain its basic standard of living, how to see to it that that thing is not in compromise, at the same time they stay with them also?
Yes, these things are going on in Bombay because you are receiving the benedictions of the USA. They like it very much to spread this sublime lifestyle to Bombay. The harder you work, the more you'll be caught up in purchasing. The more you purchase, the more someone else can produce. So it goes on endlessly. Production, consumption, production, consumption. How can there be production if there's no consumption? So, the economic frontiers in the world. Millions of people who don't have dishwashers. Millions of people who don't have household appliances. Where were we speaking? Maybe last night I was noticing, as leaving the Calcutta airport to get the flight to Bombay, there was an altar. And the altar revolved. And it was a glass case. And inside this glass case, with lights very nicely arranged, was the deity. A laundry drying machine. And the altar would revolve. And then on top of the deity was a sign proclaiming the supreme benefits of the deity. No more clotheslines. You have a laundry dryer. For this privilege, you'll work 11, 12 hours a day. This is a subject which Shamananda has asked me to prepare for a future visit. Then perhaps we may be talking to your business executive class. How sociological reports in the USA show that no one of the upper class, the managers, the executive people, no one spends time at home anymore because home is too problematic. Their main situation in life is at work, where everything happens properly, organized, relationships are productive, no personal problems, you have friends there, illicit relationships, it's all happening at work. But when you finally get home after your 11 or 12 hours at work, you have a wife who you can't deal with, you have children you have no idea how to raise. That's the other part of the American benediction. In fact, this sociological report shows that corporations think that actually maybe our employees would be happier if indeed they would spend more time at their with their families. So they're giving the lady executives maternal leave to take care of their kids at home for a couple of years before going back to work. They're organizing family events. And what did they find in every case where they tested such procedures? The company is offering these chances, but the employees refuse to take it. They don't want to spend time at home, because home is simply a problem. Here in India, there's still a strong idea how to have family life. Even material family life, there's some understanding. But what is happening in the USA is the concept of the family is becoming lost. No one knows what the point of this is. These kids give me a headache. I gave you your checkbook. I gave you your own car. What more do you want out of me? Why do I have to be faithful to you, my wife? Everyone else is having an affair. What's the matter if I have?
Who?
I did.
Yes.
This is very nice.
The main thing is I spend 12 hours a day at my corporation, and my life is full in that way. I'm appreciated, I'm praised, there's a pecking order, I can see who's high, who's low, there's opportunity for random affairs and liaisons with the opposite sex. My whole world is there at the corporation. What can home offer me? This is what's happening. In my report, a few days ago, I was describing a little bit of this reality and discussing even experiences of my own family members. This is a very, very destructive phenomenon that's happening. But some people think it's very good. I talk to professors who say, actually, you know, advanced sociological thinkers are understanding that, look, for a while we lamented the family is breaking down, but then we began to realize, actually this family is just an impediment, it's just an unnecessary complication. We should simply make people dependent on the government or a corporation, and then life is very smooth and simple. You don't need a family for your sense gratification, that can happen at any time. So for the most effective economic development, we don't need families anymore. Who is it? Marshall, economist, property solving program, said, families are the basis of economic development because for a family, a man will work so hard. No, that's finished now. The latest avant-garde thinking is that you don't need a family to be motivated to make economic development. Just the idea itself of success and money is enough to motivate you. And with that money, you can have your sense gratification any way you like, in the family, outside the family, or both, whatever. Just get the money and then you have power. So people are thinking like this. We should simply develop the living entity's relationship with the government or the corporation or both. That makes life very simple for controlling a society so there can be economic development. This is what's being passed now around the world. Now you're reporting that a person in Bombay has to work 11 or 12 hours a day to keep up. That's the standard. I know one devotee overseas. He's an accountant. He reported to me that at his accounting firm, some new graduates from university came to pick up their posts there, and they had the delusion that they were just going to work a 40-hour week. They thought, job goes from 9 to 5, you go home at 5 o'clock, that's it. Do your best between 9 and 5, and after that, great. The chief partner of the accounting firm immediately called them in after 2 weeks and told them, look, I've got news for you. You want to work a 40-hour week, you can get a job in a factory or something like that. But here, we don't go home until the job is done. It may be 7 o'clock, it may be 8 o'clock at night. You may have to come in at 7 in the morning. It doesn't matter. To be. Otherwise, there are so many applicants for jobs we can choose from. We don't need you that much. This is what's going on. How does a devotee handle all this? Unless you have powerful associations, you will succumb. You must succumb. It's too strong. This Maya being propagated around the world, it's actually demoniac, it's so strong, without good association and guidance, you cannot stand up to it. It's an intense fever and a delusion, all packed together. The fever of material progress, the fever of economic development. You were mentioning everything's becoming liberalized, the banking system, investments. What's the American strategy? Open up your markets, open up your ballot boxes, we'll take over, everything will be wonderful. We'll do it directly or indirectly. Yes, you can keep your own companies and they can still have Indian names, but we shall control one way or another. So, how does a devotee cope with this? You are demonstrating here how to do that. Because you all have a network of association and guidance, any person, I'm convinced, any person
part of this community can withstand these powerful onslaughts of Maya. Because you have established a mighty citadel of bhakti in a way that everyone can plug in and feel, I'm connected to devotees in a meaningful relationship. I can get guidance, I can get care. I'm a part of Krishna's society of devotees. Not simply I carry a card, I am a member. But I'm getting personal massage. I have a relationship with devotees who care for me and who can nourish me. And I, according to my capacity, can also nourish others. And we can all come together and glorify Krishna and experience the expansion of Krishna's glory. Once you taste the expansion of Krishna's glory, you don't care for economic expansion. Lord Caitanya Sankirtan movement is always expanding. The limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss are always moving, eternally. Devotees can taste that. They can taste the immeasurable waves in the ocean of bhakti. They can see how the ocean of Ananda is expanding, expanding, expanding. Nothing compares to that taste and experience. And when many people combine together in the Sankirtan congregational movement for spreading Lord Caitanya's mercy, they all can taste this experience and they never forget it. All right, I work, I do my job, I know what my real identity in life is. And I know it's possible that I can go back to battery in my situation because I'm associated with others who are demonstrating it can be done. It's not theory, it's not theology, it's not high-sounding words, it is actuality, I can see. And I'm a part of a network of other persons, they're demonstrating it. Sometimes I may feel a little weak, but I will get inspiration from them. I can give inspiration. I can see it all happening. Therefore, my life has its own goals. It has its own impetuses. I'm not just a fool of the corporate system. I am Krishna's devotee. And it is possible for my family to be Krishna conscious. I can point to others who are doing it. I am being the most practical. So I can see that you are providing this experience for others. First of all, you have provided it for yourself. And certainly, there'll be a few who decide that I can more effectively spread Krishna consciousness as a brahmachari. Even though I may have so much academic training, I'll make a personal decision that I can be more effective living in the brahmachari ashram, so that you also have. Then you have persons from the village who, they may not have such high education, but they have maximum sincerity, so there's a place for them too. In this way, you can create an actual human and transcendental society. And when people see that, then they become attracted and things just grow and grow and grow and grow. Because people are getting the experience, they can see Krishna consciousness is possible. It is fun, it's exciting, it expands, we are nourished, we are taken care of. What more could we want? This is better than material sense gratification.
Maharaj, the continuation of this question, the problem is always there in the person who is in the family life, that because the madness that is going on around the world, walking like a donkey, and when you compromise, when you just dedicate yourself only to Krishna consciousness, and make a very, very dedicated leaning that I want to maintain this connection at any cost, naturally one problem that comes up is, your economical, I'm talking about material advancement, is definitely going to be compromised. And a sincere devotee, when he feels about his responsibility and rest of life, he always has that fear in his mind that because I am not doing the work which I am supposed to do, the way other people are doing and earning much more money, I am not able to earn that much money because I am spending more time in Krishna, and that's why I am compromising some of my responsibility in the rest of life.
Because when we see the other family members are able to give some justice and other benefits to the family members, which we are not able to give it, that grunt is always there in our heart that I am not fulfilling the responsibility in a sincere way. In that circumstances, what should a devotee think of it? Or should he reduce his necessities of life to that level that he doesn't compromise at all and goes away all rounded?
The instruction of Lord Rishabhadeva in chapter 5 of the 5th canto is that householders should earn their livelihood in such a way that their spiritual life is not threatened. That is a direct instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In order to understand instruction, a devotee has to accept that the Lord has allotted different amounts of income for different persons. Either you can say, in the case of non-devotees, it's through karma. In the case of devotees, it's the Lord's own personal supervision. Just like Sudama Vipra. What was his realization after he went and saw the Lord? And the Lord put him on Rukmini's bedstead, and Rukmini was fanning him, and the Lord was massaging him and looking after him. And then Sudama Vipra left. Apparently the Lord had given him nothing. What was Sudama Vipra's reaction? How intelligent my Lord is. He knows that I'm so weak that if I get a little bit of opulence, I'll fall down. So he didn't give me anything. And he was rejoicing in that way. He was crediting the Supreme Lord for being so intelligent. The Lord knows how to keep his devotees from falling down. So he thought, in my case, the Lord didn't give me anything because he knew I couldn't handle it. I don't mind. I attained the association of the Supreme Lord. The goddess of fortune fanned me. The Lord sat me on her bedstead. The Lord treated me as his dear friend, embracing me. What more do I need? Of course, when he got home, he was astonished at what he saw. But still, after seeing the Lord, his reaction was, whatever has come to me is exactly what I need to make spiritual advancement. Some devotees, they may show a lot of income. Others will show less. But everyone has the equal chance to go back to Godhead. So we don't want to persecute ourselves with these unnecessary hang-ups. For that, we require guidance to become free of the self-persecution that, I'm not making enough, and what about the other family members? They're doing so much materially for the family, their families. I cannot do like that. No. We just spoke at the beginning of this class how this Leela of Pardama Muni and Devahuti and Lord Kapila shows all the elements in perfect balance. Responsibility, affection, knowledge, transcendence, and detachment. It's all there. So why should you feel insecure about persons who have no balance? You have the most valuable thing. You can learn how to balance all these elements. Responsibility for the family, affection for the family, transcendental knowledge, and the acts of detachment. All together. This is how powerful bhakti is. That you should be proud of, that you have a chance for such a profound, extraordinary experience. Why become torn by twinges of self-doubt that, I'm not doing materially enough? By your spiritual endeavors, of course, you're doing the best thing for the relative. They may not appreciate. Still, the fact is there. Once again, you need to realize who the real family is. The real family is the Satsanga, the association of those dedicated to the eternal. We take care of our material affairs in a responsible way, but still, the real family is the Achyuta Gotra, the Gotra of the infallible Supreme Lord. Anyone who takes up bhakti under the guidance of the Parampara has entered the Achyuta Gotra. Whether you are from AIT or whether you are from the village as a sweeper, you can join the Achyuta Gotra. What did Sudama Vipra give to the Supreme Lord? A morsel of chipped rice. His wife didn't even have that. She had to go beg it from other householders. But when Lord Krishna took that Mort was just right. He considered it to be the most perfect offering. So much so that Rukmini had to stop him. Don't take any more. I'm already indebted enough now to this Brahmana. If you eat more, how will I ever be able to compensate? Because Vitali the Fortune has to reciprocate with devotees to achieve your favor. Enough, enough. Any other questions? Yes.
Mother, in the relationship between a spiritual master and his disciple, personal or institutional, in other words, does the disciple surrender to the individual spiritual master or to the impersonal disciple of the world?
The relationship is personal, contained within Prabhupada's institution. There's no doubt the relationship has to be personal. But it is contained within Prabhupada's organized society because that is the desire of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's the desire of Srila Prabhupada. I have seen around the world many devotees who don't want a personal relationship with their spiritual master. Don't bring them too close. You might tell me something I don't want to do. Keep them up in the air flying on the other side of the world. I've got his picture on my wall. That's enough. That's as close as he's going to get. All right, I've been around in the temple for a couple of years. Time for that initiation thing. Okay. Which mail order guru will I get? Tell your name to somebody. Who will it be? This is a perversion of the system. You should look to someone who will induce surrender in you. Someone who you feel confident that in this person's association, I will be inspired to give more to Krishna. That's the person you should go for, not run away from. So that is a personal affair. How the personal relationship manifests, it can be different. Prabhupada always said he never saw his spiritual master more than 10 times. Yet at the same time, he told my godbrother Bhujan Prabhu, I wish I could raise all my disciples personally. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I'll do it with all the time.